In you, O Lord, I seek refuge. Do not let me ever be put to shame. In your righteousness, deliver me. Incline your ear to me. Rescue me speedily. Be a rock of refuge for me, a strong fortress to save me. You are indeed my rock and my fortress. For your name's sake, lead me and guide me. Take me out of the net that is hidden for me, for you are my refuge. Into your hand I commit my spirit. You have redeemed me, O Lord, faithful God. I am the scorn of all my adversaries, a horror to my neighbor, an object of dread to my acquaintances. Those who see me in the street flee from me. I have passed out of mind like one who is dead. I have become a broken vessel. For I hear in the whispering of many terror all around, as they scheme together against me, as they plot to take my life.
The soldiers led Jesus into the courtyard of the palace, that is, the governor's headquarters, and they called together the whole cohort, and they clothed him in a purple cloak. And after twisting some thorns into a crown, they put it on him, and they began saluting him, "Hail, King of the Jews!" They struck his head with a reed, spat on him, and knelt down in homage to him. After mocking him, they stripped him of the purple cloak and put his own clothes on him. Then they led him out to crucify him.
But I trust in you, O Lord. I say, you are my God. My times are in your hands. Deliver me from the hand of my enemies and persecutors. Let your face shine upon me, your servant. Save me in your steadfast love.
Sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me. How often I wish that were true. I don't know what you perceive as the worst, but lately I've been thinking about that pointed finger. The pointed finger of accusation. The pointed finger of rejection, how it is projected out there to sing a song that is a Pakistani confession. It's very meaningful for me this morning because I think a lot of what is happening in the world around us has to do with the pointed finger. In accusation and hostility. It creates foreboding within me, and it creates a lot of fear within those I pastor. A friend of mine who teaches in the university said to me just last week, "In academia, I could never share my past brokenness. I would be pigeonholed. People would poke fun. I would not be taken seriously. I'm afraid my papers would not be published." a college student shared with me just last month. This student is struggling with an addiction and said, "Everybody who suffers with addiction wants to hide. We feel powerless. We feel dependent. We feel ashamed and embarrassed." And he said, "What I really fear is how the good people of the church will view me if I'm found out." I grew up in the days when the Mennonite church required public confession for a number of things. I really believe in the importance of confession. And I have seen that confession to the community can be very healing and healthy. I've also experienced the dark side of what public exposing can do. When I was a little girl, there was a teenager in my church who was required to make a public confession for having cut her hair. As the pastor was reading Alice's confession, and she was turning so red, I could feel her humiliation. And I was a little girl, and I knew my hair was a lot shorter than Alice's. And it terrified me. I did not want the kind of condemnation that I thought she was experiencing to ever be mine. Almost 20 years ago, I met a woman named Cora who shared this story with me. She said, "I was traveling in a van with my Sunday school class to a weekend event. And as we traveled, it was the same weekend that there was a march for gay rights in Washington, I think maybe one of the first ones. And people were sharing in the van about the abomination of a gay lifestyle. And she said, one man said, 'You know, I think if we just drop a bomb on Washington on that march, we could take care of a lot of our problems.'" She said the van burst into laughter. And one person said, "Well, you know, if there ever was a good use for a bomb, this might be it." Then Cora said, "Well, if you drop a bomb on that march, you would probably kill my son." She said, "At that moment, I became an outsider in my own Sunday school class." Social shaming, public humiliation, personal rejection, that awful fear that maybe our own community may not have the space or the grace enough for us. That fear that when we've been held up for inspection, we may be found wanting and may not measure up. It is the primal fear. One more potent for many people than death. Not long ago, I was at an event in a small town, and I was sitting up in the bleachers of the high school. And I was looking around at this beautiful community who knew each other so well and had learned to care for each other. And at the same time, I was asking in the back of my head, "But what if we fail here? What if we mess up financially? Or what if our marriages don't succeed? What if we say the wrong thing in the pulpit or in the classroom? What if the secrets here in this group would come tumbling out into the light? When our children deviate, when we make wrong turns, is community friend or is it foe? Oh, how I hate the whispering that can ensue. The fear of shaming is not only present for those who mess up, but also for those who succeed. The more we succeed, the higher the bar. Then there's always the fear that, well, what if we don't come through this time? And the pressure is on. Psalm 31 was written by a person of deep faith. The psalmist has experienced God as rock, stronghold, refuge, safety, shelter, truth, and an unfailing, steadfast lover. And to this God, the psalmist cries out, terror. Do not let me be put to shame. The psalmist expresses that primal fear that keeps us hiding if we haven't gotten it right and keeps us bound when we do it so perfectly. The psalmist is shuddering and pleading with God, do not let me be put to shame. Jesus' words are, let this cup pass from me. And I imagine that Jesus had rehearsed Psalm 31 many, many times. Because he pleads too. Rescue me speedily, the psalmist says. Get me out of the net. Take me out of the hidden traps. It seems like everyone has turned against this poet. Enemies and adversaries for sure, but also his neighbors and his friends. The whispering is all around him, and the whispering is all about him. The psalmist says, the people who see me in the streets flee. They want to forget me. They treat me like I am dead. To them, I am a broken vessel beyond repair. I have been discarded by the community. They gossip and they scheme against me. This ancient poet cries out with the same fear that I know so well. Fear of a pointed finger. The fear of being known for who I am and not being acceptable. Has running away ever looked appealing to you? I think of Hawthorne's heroine Hester Prynne wearing that big A so that everyone can see her sin, that constant reminder of it. And I wonder sometimes why Hester didn't just go to Los Angeles. Become a stranger among strangers, for no one would notice or even care that there had ever been an A. When we hurt in community, we want to run away, we want to hide, we want to withdraw, and a lot of people just do leave. I come back to the foundational story in Genesis. Adam and Eve did run away, and they did hide. They did want to be anonymous. And they were afraid of the consequences of being found out. They fully expect the hand of God to slap them with death and nail them for their sin. But the surprise is, God, who comes saying, "Adam, where are you?" does not come with a detective's flashlight and a sense of glee that, "Aha, I found you here." The hand of God does not come like a police officer with a billy club ready to punish. The hands of God are not carrying a flashlight and they're not carrying a billy club, but the hands of God do contain something. And it's this image that I come back to again and again in my spiritual journey. The hands of God are carrying a sewing box. Where God kneels down and makes new clothes so that these disobedient ones do not have to be ashamed anymore. We all know there are consequences for our sins. That God, our judge, is not without boundaries. There will be thorns and there will be thistles for Adam and Eve, and there will be weeds. They will need to deal with those from here on out. There will be no more residing in a garden of innocent freedom. But God does not point the finger and scold. God does not reject and humiliate. God does not slay the offenders. The thorns of the sinner's behavior are not choked out by the grace. The thorns of the sinner's behavior have not choked out the grace of this almighty lover. Three times in Psalm 31, as the psalmist pleads in this time of great shaming and humiliation, three times the psalmist affirms God's unfailing, steadfast love. And it is in this psalm that the image of God's hands keep coming up as a place of safety and refuge and home. The image of the God who carries the sewing box is the one that I carry with me. Because in all my fears, these are the hands I can trust. These are the hands of the one who desires that we all live in peace and unafraid. God's hands are always, always reaching out to save. This is the rock, the shelter, the truth, and the Redeemer the psalmist has known in the past and the psalmist is relying on now at this moment in the worst. I don't know why this psalmist poet's community rejected this person, but what we know is that in this most excruciating terror, that's his word, terror, psalmist knows a resting place. In the midst of the worst, the one who knows and sees all sews us clothes in our naked vulnerability. It is the image of those hands that I believe Jesus carries with him when he goes to his hometown and they throw him out. There's really no subtle whispering there. It's brutality and hostility right out there. I think it's this image of these hands that Jesus carries when his mother Mary comes with her boys to take Jesus back home because he's gone a little too far. When even his family can't understand him, there's these hands. And then there's his friends. There's that excruciating time when Judas betrays and Peter denies and the rest fall asleep and slip away. And the leaders of his own beloved tradition want to eliminate him. Jesus bears that purple cloak of mocking and crown of thorns and takes the taunts. And then there will be hammering. And I am a Christian today because of this image. Because a God comes in Jesus and takes it on. Takes on the fear that is more powerful than death. And Jesus, in his place of God-forsakenness, brings it all back into those hands. Repeating the psalmist's words, "Into your hands I commit my spirit and my living, even here, even in the worst." The psalmist is reminding us there are hands we can trust. And Jesus knows that those gracious hands are bending over us like a mammy over her baby, sewing us clothes, binding up wounds, and holding us in the darkest of nights. Jesus knows the stronghold of hands into which we can entrust all things. For us to trust the hands of God to be our grace enables us to offer mercy to one another in community. Enables us to become a community that is safe and loving, a loving environment for all. The utterly merciful hands of God enable us to trust. May we live and reside in those hands this day. Amen.